This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the special military operation, as Vladimir Putin calls it, continues in Ukraine. It is, of course, an invasion and a brutal one involving war crimes of the most horrible type. And it is, of course, mostly from a Ukrainian perspective that we view this conflict. But there is also, on the other side of it, a Russian perspective. And in particular, since the sort of uprising that was led by Yevgeny Prigozhin and his Wagner group of mercenaries, which marched to within 200 kilometers of Moscow before turning back. And it's a pleasure to welcome again to the stand Dmitry Ilovsky. He is the chief editor for the YouTube channel Kordakovsky.live. Before the war, he was deputy editor-in-chief for TV Rain in Moscow. He moved to Lithuania when the war began, and independent media outlets, including TV Rain, were closed down in Russia. Dmitry, good day to you, and thank you very much for joining us. The news from Moscow is particularly interesting in the last 24 hours. We know about the Kerch Bridge being attacked successfully by the Ukrainians, limited success, but still success. But I see that yet another Russian general has been fired or dismissed for telling the truth or his truth about the Ukraine problems. Ivan Popov, he commanded the 58th Combined Arms Army, which is fighting on the front line near Zaporizhia. And he accused the Russian military leaders in Moscow of not supporting him. It's quite a strong attack on the military leaders. What does that tell us about A, morale among the Russian fighters, and B, the willingness to take a dangerous step on the face of it and attack the top brass people like Shoigu, the Minister for Defense, or Gerasimov, who is leading the army?
Hello, and thank you very much for having me. Well, first of all, let me mention that the Ukrainian attack on Kerch Bridge, or on Crimea, yes, Bridge, as everybody actually caused death of two Russian citizens, which were not military. They were peaceful, and they were coming back from Crimea to Russia. They were from Belgrade town, Belgrade city,
yes,
which is constantly under Ukrainian shoot, and their daughter is still alive, 14 years old. So I don't know whether it was successful or not. It's pretty, yes, hard to say. Well, they've hit the target. Concerning General Ivan Popov, it's a very interesting case because that was actually, I guess, the first Russian high-ranked military official general who was so critical to the army and so critical to Shoigu and Gerasimov And he actually used that genre of Mr. Prigozhin. He did the voice message. But he was addressing his soldiers. He called them my beautiful gladiators.
Yes.
And he was addressing them like they were his own soldiers, like they were his own army. So that basically brings us to some, I guess, period or age of medieval ages, where every general or powerful man used to have his own army and he was in charge of it, he was in command of it. But basically what he said doesn't, his message didn't give us some sort of a new understanding of problems Russian army in Ukraine. His army was in charge of fighting for city of Mariupol in the beginning of war.
Yes.
And now they were the one to face the Ukrainian counter-offensive operation. So they fought a lot, and the war for them was really tough. That was really hard for them. And he said that Shoigu and Gerasimov, they cannot provide the rotation for his soldiers, and there are huge problems with the counter artillery firings. So this is what we actually already know about the army.
Yes, and he said that he didn't get the support behind him, and as you say, he referred very, you know, favorably to his own troops. The question that arises, I suppose, Dmitry, is that he felt able to say what he said and to survive. Because as we understand it, and I've researched it, there are 11 senior military figures, generals mostly, who have disappeared, either fallen out of favor or fallen out of a window. There seems to be around Putin now a sense of instability, and particularly since Prigozhin made his move, I think it's 3 weeks ago now, on Moscow and then stopped. Putin, from where we're looking, doesn't appear to have the same authority that he once had. Is that your view, or am I misreading it?
I actually would like to agree with you. Yes, we see that Putin is in crisis, and it started from the coup attempt by Prigozhin almost a month ago, actually.
Yes.
Quite a long time ago. But since we haven't seen Mr. Surovikin, who is the famously known General Armageddon,
yes,
who is so loved by Western media.
Yes, and he was involved in the business in Syria, which was brutal and cruel. He was part of that conflict as well, wasn't he, and led it?
Yes.
Yes.
Precisely. And that guy, he's a real butcher. He's a thug, he's a butcher, and he has disappeared. But we know that when Prigozhin started his march, Suravikin was the one who was saying, no, guys, you got to stop over there. Don't march on Russia. Stop on Moscow. Stop your attempt of the coup. So let's make a peaceful deal. But we see actually it didn't help him a lot. Though General Popov, whose actually nickname is Spartak, he is very highly unlikely a fan of Suravikin.
Right.
I think he's the proper Putin's general. The guy who is actually, who plays on the same side with Putin and Prigozhin. And funny thing actually, Iman, you know that Spartak is not only the name of the gladiator, but there is also a Russian football club called Spartak.
Yes, that's right. And, yeah, I remember them, yes.
Do you know who's
I do,
the main,
yes, I remember
rival
them. Of- yes, I was a footballer myself in my past.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay.
So the main rival of football club Spartak is another Moscow club named CSKA.
Yes.
Central Soviet Army Club.
Ah,
so
okay.
We see that Spartak is fighting again the Soviet army. And this is quite peculiar, I guess.
Yes, tell me about Prigozhin. And from reports we're getting in the West, it seems nobody knows exactly where he is right now.
Yes, absolutely. We know that a part of his mercenaries of BMC Wagner Company are currently moving to Belarus with all their techniques, with some of their stuff. And we know that they are preparing some sort of a camp in Belarus, not far from Minsk, and actually not far from the place where I am now, actually. It's around 300 kilometers from Lithuania,
yes,
from Vilnius, from NATO, from European Union. And I think that that move was made to destabilize the sense of security in the European region. Powerful people who have only hunger for blood. They are now almost at the entrance to Europe. And nobody knows what they want to do there, how they will behave themselves. And Lukashenko is a pretty tough guy, and he's a very secret guy. We don't know what's on his mind. And
yes,
let's remember how he dealt with the revolution in Belarus.
Yes,
it was like 2 or 3 years ago. So I can't remember exactly right now. So he might need actually that mercenaries. But the question that really bothers me. We know that Putin and the Russian budget spent lots of money on Prigozhin and on his mercenaries. Now, Lukashenko is not that rich, and Belarus is not that rich.
Yes.
So how are they going to pay them? What's money? Where are they going to take it from? And this is the main question, actually, that bothers me, and I still don't know anything about it. Though Prigozhin is pretty quiet last days, I'd rather say last weeks, he used to be very active in social media. He used to give lots of interviews, lots of voice messages through his Telegram account. But now we do not hear a lot from that guy. Some critics say that he might be actually gone already.
Right. There was a report in the British newspapers that he may have stomach cancer. I don't know about the accuracy of that, but you're suggesting that Putin may have already taken him out.
That is quite possible, actually. And I am not a doctor, and I haven't seen Gordon, and haven't examined his stomach.
Yes.
but it's quite possible. We are aware that he was. He was doing some treatment in one of St. Peter's very elite, very posh medical clinics. But we don't know anything about his state for this moment, for now. We have seen actually one of his photos a couple of days ago where he's sitting on a bed in some camp in his underwear.
Yes, I saw that picture.
Yeah. Quite interesting. And this is not the image of a powerful chief of mercenaries that we're used to see.
Yes.
Actually, this is something new.
Now, the Ukrainian summer offensive is moving slowly. I think it seems all reports suggest the Russians have fields of mines. They have very good defenses and trenches, and Ukraine is not making rapid progress. It's making slow progress. But is there any particular symbolism in blowing up a part of the Kerch Bridge? Because the Kerch Bridge was very much a Putin project. He drove across it. It links Russia, southern Russia, to Crimea, and therefore is an important target.
There is a lot of symbolism in the attack on Kerch Bridge. Well, let me remind you that a year ago, on that day, Dmitry Medvedev, who used to be a Russian president,
yes,
and prime minister, pretty liberal one, now he's the deputy secretary of Defense Council in Russia. So a year ago, he said, if anybody will try to attack Crimea, we will be reacting very, very seriously. And he said it's going to be apocalyptic for Ukrainians.
Yes.
So a year has passed, and strictly on that day, Ukrainians did what they did. Secondly, do you know what international holiday was yesterday? That was the day of international justice, the day of international courts, which is right. Celebrated in the whole world.
Yeah.
And you know that there is a tiny, cozy European town in Netherlands which is looking forward for Putin's visit to this place. I'm talking about The Hague. And second and thirdly, on that day, a tragedy with the MH17 happened.
Yes.
So there is a lot of symbolism in yesterday's attack. Though I feel very sorry about Russian family who has died
there. Of course, yes, and the child as well who was injured. Other reports that we are getting from American military leaders is that this could be a very long war and there is a long, long way to go. Would that have any meaning for you, or do you have any assessment about where we are now in terms of the length of this war?
You see, I was looking really forward for this summer.
Yes.
Because as we have discussed, my point of view was that the events of this summer and what's going on front and in Russia and in Kyiv will mean a lot. It will be an indicator of the nearest future for us.
Yes.
And we see that the offensive operation of Ukrainian armed forces is ongoing, but as you've mentioned, it's really very slow. And I think that this is the sign of the very slow and very violent war. We know that Ukrainians are fighting now for almost every field, for almost every square kilometer. So I think that gives us an understanding of how things will roll on in the future. This war will last long, and maybe we are somewhere at around midterm of it. But I think it will take longer than all of us thought.
Now, you mentioned Sorovikin, General Armageddon. He has not been seen in public since the Wagner mutiny. This is when Prigozhin marched towards Moscow, got within 200 kilometers. Shorovikin and Prigozhin were close to each other, we understand. Is that correct? And the fact that both of them now are quote unquote resting or maybe dead, how significant is that? And how significant also, Dmitry, is the fact that 11 other top military men are also disappeared? That must be very destabilizing for Putin and for the Russian leadership in general.
We actually don't know what's going on with them. So let's... I suggest there are two options. First of all, they are taken off from their posts, from their duties,
yes.
And they are under some sort of NDA. Secondly, interrogated somewhere in Lubyanka using some special measures, as they used to call it during Stalin's period, Stalin's era. And we definitely know that FSB works pretty much with the same terms and the conditions as their gangster.
Yeah, to just let our listeners know, the FSB used to be known as the KGB, correct?
Yes.
And it's Putin was in it in Germany. That's where he comes from.
Yes, and before running for presidency, he was the head of FSB. And FSB actually is in charge of providing all the intelligence to president and to Russian military before the attack before the war started in last February. So basically, dead guys are pretty powerful. But this is also the main problem of my country and of my people. Nobody after Soviet Union collapsed said that KGB is a monster.
Yes.
That their archives should be published.
Yes.
That all the people who were in charge of executions should be arrested and their names should be public. This is why things went in the way they did. This is the problem of Putinism and of current Russian regime and of war in Ukraine itself. Concerning, let's go back to the generals and to Suravikin. I think Putin will have to show us them. He cannot keep his mouth shut about them for such a long period of time. And it's almost a month since the coup started. So let's wait a little bit. And I guess we'll get some news about them.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Let me ask you about your fellow countrymen and women who are living in Russia. There is an election, I know, next year now, and I know a Russian election is not quite like an American election. You won't get Donald Trump, for one thing. But the mood of people, their morale, how is it?
This is actually what bothers me. I've been watching some interviews from Crimea, and from Moscow, and people are, they don't care. This is what really
right.
makes me upset.
Yes.
They don't care. I do not understand, is it what they really think, or is it
yes.
their sort of a defensive mechanism of their mind, of their soul? Yeah.
Yes, yes, of course.
Because they worry about everything in the world, about summer, about temperature, about price on fruits,
yes.
about their vacation on Black Sea. But they prefer not to take a close look on what's going on. I tend to believe that this is their defensive reaction.
Yes.
And they don't want to see things around them. But they will have to one day.
The other question, there are two other questions I have for you, Dmitry. One is about the support for Putin among oligarchs and how important that support is and how it manifests itself?
This is very important. Russian oligarchs, they are not oligarchs. They are close allies of Putin. There used to be oligarchs who used to have both money and power.
Yes.
But now they are like wallets of Mr. Putin.
Yes.
They are just walking jars with the coins.
Yes.
And this is it. And I think that because of the recent events, they tend even to get closer to Putin because they see that Prigozhin could come to Moscow, and he's very anti-elite.
Right.
He's very anti-oligarch. He's saying that they are not effective, and he's saying that let's take their houses, their cash, their money, and let's divide it.
Yes, and that scene we saw in the city took over, was it Rostov?
Rostov, yeah.
Yeah, same. And we saw him posing for selfies and all the young guys cheering him and shaking his hand. Are they doing that because they know about his sort of view of the oligarchs?
Yeah, yeah, right. Exactly. And sometimes I actually look at him and get some Navalny vibes.
famous
Russian whistleblower and anti-corruption activist who is now imprisoned. So he took something from him, and he's a monster. But you know, let me say that he's pretty charismatic, and he knows how to speak with people.
Right. A final question, Dmitry, for now. Next year in the United States, in November, there is a presidential election. At the moment, Donald Trump is 50-50 to be the next president of the United States, to have a second term in office. I'm sure, or am I right in believing that Putin will be watching this, that you as a journalist will be watching this, and that if Trump becomes the next president of the United States, it's very, very good news for Putin and his project.
Exactly. Yes, President Trump is a crucial figure for Russian president. They are buddies.
Yeah.
And it's very important for Ukraine to get the support of the West and of the United States. As far as we can assess now at the moment, Donald Trump is not eager to spend a lot of money on supporting Ukraine.
Yes.
He wants to take all that money and to save them for the inner needs.
Yes.
So that will be a very bad news, extremely bad news for Ukraine, for Kyiv, for President Zelensky. So we should hope and pray that Trump would not win that elections. And maybe there would be a new figure, somebody new from Republican Party, because not all the Republicans are happy with the president, with Trump as a president.
The bad news, Dmitry, is he's leading all the other Republicans by 40%.
yes, as for now. But, you know, American politics is a very vivid process.
Yeah.
So it might change any time.
Okay. Dmitry Ilovsky, we're very grateful to you for joining us from Lithuania, where you exiled to because you believe in the freedom to speak. And we're very grateful to you. Take care of yourself. We're grateful to Dmitry, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.